Hello and welcome to History Gap. I'm Georgia McAndrew. Welcome to Christmas episode number 2.
Oh, love to be here.
What do most girls want for Christmas, Lucy?
Well, this is a tough question, but
it is a tough question.
Something that's always on my list is basic, but a fluffy pair of socks.
I do rate a pair of fluffy socks.
Yeah.
But also Chanel.
Oh! Oh, the budget is much better than I was expecting.
Well, someone else is buying. I'm taking Chanel. That's right, on History Gap today, we're talking about the complicated, but also brilliant, founder of fashion and perfume brand Coco Chanel, otherwise known as Miss Gabrielle Chanel. How much do you know about Gabrielle Chanel, the person, Lucy?
Honestly, not that much. I think I've seen some like rumours online over the years, but I've never done a personal deep dive. And yeah. I'm very intrigued.
Yeah, I too didn't know much about Gabrielle Chanel. And it seems we are not the only people. In fact, she is a very mysterious woman. And I want to preface this episode, as we say, we are not historians. So when I was researching her, it kept coming up again and again that everyone was like, we're not really too sure about Gabrielle Chanel's life.
But no one wants to commit.
Yeah. And apparently there was always wild rumours about her. And she liked that. Like she had this.
She was egging on the rumours. That's not helpful,
yeah,
Chanel.
For us History Gap gals, it's not helpful. But she basically, part of her brand, I guess, as Coco Chanel, was that she was a mysterious persona.
I suppose that's premium, the whole mystique.
Yes. And so she was, yeah, as I said, she was known for allowing these extravagant rumours to go around. Do you think you give off mysterious vibes, Lucy?
Absolutely not. I am too much of a chatterbox and I like to fill awkward spaces. So I will just say things that I'm just like, yeah, babe, shut up.
Yeah, I probably back in the day liked to think I was like coy and sexy and cool. But I think I'm such an open book and you can tell exactly what I'm thinking on my face
100%,
at all times. It's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a problem for me, actually. But in light of all of this, I've chosen to get most of my information from interviews with Aurélie Cullen, who put on the sold-out Chanel exhibition in New York and London. Mm. So with this in mind, let's start at the beginning of Gabrielle Chanel. So Coco Chanel as a business in 2022 was valued at $15.3 billion.
Wow.
But it might surprise you to know that Gabrielle Chanel, the person, wasn't born with any money in her pocket. In fact, Chanel was born into poverty and out of wedlock in 1883 in the French countryside. And as a little girl, her mother sadly passed away and her father then abandoned her and her siblings to an orphanage.
Wow.
Pretty bleak start in the world. This orphanage was a convent which was run by nuns. And part of Gabrielle's education at the convent was learning to sew and repair clothes.
A useful skill.
You know where this is going.
Yeah.
A skill that would go on to change her life. At 18 years old, Chanel was helped by the nuns to obtain a charity place at Notre Dame boarding school, and before long was working in Paris as a seamstress. It was here that she began to meet army officers who happened to be staying in Paris in barracks. And as quite the persona, she was invited to sing for the soldiers. As part of her performance, Gabrielle sang a song about a young girl who had lost her dog in Paris, with a song lyric that read,
Kiko, coo, coven. That was bad. Kika, oh, fucking hell. Kika, coo.
Right. Do you know what? It was just
not going well.
Sorry, that was really well.
No, I'm really not doing it.
Do you know what, Lizzie? You tried. I basically, there was a song lyric in it that translates to, who saw Coco? And so the nickname Coco was born. Lizzie, just one more time for the listeners, please.
Kika Kuka. Maybe that one's better. Who knows?
Wrong order, but it's absolutely fine.
Let us know how horrendous that was, please. Just not in the comments of the review section.
A private DM.
If you could do that on a private DM, that'd be great.
Now, like any good story here on History Gap, Gabrielle's life is littered with lovers, most of whom helped Gabrielle finance her fashion dreams. Side note, I hate when men on the internet get annoyed about women using men's money for things back in the day. Because it's like women literally couldn't open a bank account until 1974.
Yeah, like what did you expect, babe? And also, if you think about it, it was a great investment because you've made history now.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also just like, there was literally no other way they had to marry someone to have any sort of funds to pursue their passion.
That was literally the rules of the game you made.
Yeah. And I guess there's that whole thing about should men pay on the first date. Mm. And I really believe, like, do whatever you want. If, like, if your man wants to pay, fine. If a girl wants to pay, or equal, whatever. But again, that comes from the patriarchy.
Yeah. It's like, don't get mad at what you created.
Yeah. Get mad at your ancestors, babe.
Yeah.
Anywho, back to lovers.
Back into the story, anyway.
Step back into the room, people. Chanel had some impressive lovers in her time. So here are just some of the lovers that we know of. She had a love affair with the Prince of Wales, aka the future King of England, King Edward VII, a Grand Duke in Russia. He was a cousin of a Tsar. The second Duke of Westminster, whom she dated for over a decade, and to whom she famously said when he asked for her hand in marriage,
"There have been too many duchesses of the Westminster, but only one Coco Chanel."
And actually, Chanel never went on to marry.
Oh, interesting. Mm. She was an independent girlie.
She was. But it was an earlier lover who would help launch her fashion dynasty. So in 1901, she met a man called Arthur Boy Capel, a rich aristocrat who helped her finance a small clothing shop in Deauville, France, where she sold simple hats, sportswear, and sweaters. Mm. In fact, Coco's first real sense of clothing success came from a sweater dress she had fashioned out of an old jumper. In an interview, she's quoted saying,
"My fortune is built on that old jersey that I put on because it was cold in the Deauville."
And I was quite surprised, Lucy, when I found out that her first fashion was, like,
quite casual.
Well, basically activewear.
Yeah.
That's what it is now.
Was that that common at the time?
No,
activewear?
Not at all. And then this shop was followed by a branch, and then other shops across France, and finally a couture house in Paris.
She's like, I'm levelling up.
Yeah. I'm leveling up to couture. So what was it about Coco Chanel's designs that were so popular? As we just mentioned, it was all about modernity.
Mm.
So for the first time, someone was making clothes for women that were comfortable and chic. She said goodbye to corsets and hello to new materials like cotton velour and blended traditionally male clothing items with a feminine style.
Mm.
During these years in Paris, she also created the LBD.
Iconic.
And for our listeners, Lucy, please can you tell them what an LBD stands for?
An LBD is the little black dress.
Mm. Otherwise known as a closet essential.
Mm, really is. You can't go wrong with it.
It's so true. And the LBD was quite revolutionary because she had created it in post-World War One, which was the roaring 20s, where in the fashion world, colour was on the agenda. Mm. And black for many was still a symbol of mourning from the World War. But Gabrielle had refashioned the LBD into something simple, timeless, and chic.
And the parties were really, you know, it was the roaring 20s. It was all about. So everyone needed a lot of good fits ready for these big parties.
So true. And she didn't stop with the LBD. Here's just some of the things that she created. So she created sailor tops, visible pockets. So before that, pockets had only been sewn on the inside.
So this is where, like, the stitching's around the outer of pocket.
Yes.
Yeah.
Side note, how good is it when a dress has pockets?
Oh, love it.
God, go wild with
those. So exciting. Or a skirt. I'm like, ooh, pockets. Yeah.
You know when you're, like, shopping and you pick up, like, a dress or a skirt and you're like, oh, pockets.
Yeah, it's such a woman thing to do.
Mm-hmm. She also created matching lining. So in most Chanel clothes, the lining matches the outer piece. So, like, tailored jackets match with the bodice, all that sort of stuff. Shape was a big thing in Coco's designs. So she made simple shapes that fitted the feminine form in all its ranges and didn't require a corset.
Mm.
So basically, she created clothes that came in at the waist.
Yeah.
It wasn't a thing before because everyone just wore corsets. I also didn't know people wore corsets, like, up until, well, World War II, really.
Yeah, that seems wild to me.
She blended tweed into female fashion. It previously only been used for men and hunting. She also created the girl suit, aka a blazer, skirt, and a matching blouse with pockets, and you guessed it, lining and even tweed sometimes.
Wow, she was mixing these trends.
Mm-hmm. She created the two-tone heeled shoe. You know that, like, iconic one, it's like pointy at the front, it's black and then cream.
Yes, I do know it, yeah.
And she also created the iconic Chanel bag with a practical handle that could be carried in the hand or on the shoulder. And she also created the number 5 perfume. And the style of the bottle itself is quite interesting because it remains timeless, even though it's a very pure and plain style. And it contrasted quite bigly with the perfume designs at the time that were really like extravagant and otherworldly. She was also the first major fashion designer to introduce a perfume to her range.
Just a little simple list then. She's not done too much.
Whew, she is busy. And then there was also, she was famous for her haircuts as well.
Yeah, wow. Check that one in there.
So Coco was living her best life as a fashion icon. Her celeb status also meant she had an impressive social circle of people, such as Winston Churchill, Igor Stravinsky, and Picasso. And then World War II comes along, and well, this is where Coco's legacy takes a bit of a downward turn.
This is the rumours I'd heard.
This part of Coco's story is very hard to piece together, and nobody really knows the full story, and so I will be offering the varied explanations that are out there. So, picture the scene. It's a warm summer's day in 1940, and the streets of Paris are currently occupied by Nazi forces. A smart-dressed man strolls along the streets into the Ritz Hotel. This man is a high-ranking German spy called Hans Gunther von Dinklage, and he's there to visit Coco Chanel. So Hans Gunther von Dinklage, otherwise known as Spatz, was 13 years younger than Chanel, who was 58 at the time, when their affair began. Half English, half German, it's thought he would meet to speak English with Chanel at her Parisian apartment in the Ritz. There are many theories as to why Gabrielle was associating with a German spy. The first was love. He was a lover of Coco's. The second, she was a double agent working for the French resistance and using him for information. The third, she was trying to free her brother, who was actually trapped in a German camp, and it suggested she was swapping information to allow for his freedom.
Wow.
The fourth was that she was herself a Nazi sympathizer. Though history has yet to learn of the real reason, after the war, Coco was actually interrogated in a war court, but found not guilty. History reports that Winston Churchill himself wrote a character letter to the court on behalf of Coco, and it's thought that this letter held great weight in the ruling itself.
Well, it would. You did mention that they were friends earlier.
Although their friendship was undoubtedly genuine, it's also theorised that Winston also did this to honour Gabrielle's help to the French resistance. So it's rumoured that she had been allowing the French resistance to use her Riviera villa to send secret transmitter messages from her cellars for the war, for spy information.
So you can see why it feels quite conflicted, the story.
Absolutely. And I do think, I mean, we've kind of spoken about this before when we were researching History Gap, that a lot of famous people at that time period had really strange connections.
Yeah.
And it was interesting that high-profile people were involved in spying and things like
that. I suppose they were well connected, so it makes sense that they were kind of used in a way.
Yeah, definitely. Nonetheless, no one can say for sure what the nature of her relationship was with Hans Gunther von Dinklage, and Chanel's personal reputation and brand did take a hit for her associations with him. She even spent some time in Switzerland after the war to distance herself from the narrative. And it wasn't until many years later that at age 70, she would fully relaunch Coco Chanel, the brand.
So it took a pause?
It took a pause. So she was in Switzerland for quite a few years.
And then she's like, we're doing a rebrand. Or a relaunch.
We're doing a relaunch, yes. And many believe that Chanel had no need to reopen her couture house after the war, because she was actually very financially secure, thanks to the continuing revenue from her perfume sales. However, relaunch she did, and with quite a success. It was at this time that her iconic logo became the focal point of design, using its well-known status to go global. She's also recorded to have told an actress in an interview that she was...
dying.
Sorry. Oh. God, stop your acting.
Just dying. Full stop. Dying of boredom.
She was
quite anticlimactic.
Yep, she was dying of boredom and therefore wanted to get back into the fashion industry. And even at age 71, Chanel proved that she still had it. And if she didn't relaunch, the brand might not be where it is today, that being worth $15.3 billion.
Wow. It's a fair chunk of change.
And that is the complicated life, Coco Chanel.
And it does seem very complicated. And like you said, she allowed all these rumors. And so you don't really know what is true anymore. Which is so interesting because, you know, you'll hear different narratives, I suppose, online if people are picking a side to tell. Mm. And it's interesting that there are multiple narratives going out. And obviously her name technically was cleared.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, and they didn't really take that lightly after the war.
No.
You know.
No, definitely not.
You know, and then you could also see it from the other side where it's totally. Like her connection to Churchill could have really worked in her favour. So it's a complicated tale.
It is a complicated tale. And also, I guess, removing her from that narrative, the impact that she's had on fashion today, that even when, you, obviously, like, the little black dress and, like, all the different shapes and the fashion that she impacted. But then even going back to her first sort of clothing range, wear. That's, like, the big thing now.
Yeah, it's like, thanks so much for basically shaping my whole entire wardrobe.
Yeah. Coco Chanel, she was a fashion icon.
Yeah, she knew what she was doing. What I thought was interesting as well is when you look at her design around simplicity and then you think about her growing up in the orphanage and, you know, with these nuns teaching her to sew, it would have been quite simplistic, and she probably picked up a real natural style
of upcycling
of using these really simple but effective designs. And she was like, no, this is my thing. And actually, even in the colors, like, Chanel aren't necessarily known for, like, bright colors. They are known for black, whites, you know.
That, like, played pink sort of.
Yeah. Color. Like, maybe the colors that she would have grown up with in that environment. Yeah. It's really interesting.
And it's interesting that her whole thing was, like, comfort for women as well, and, like, practicality. And that really was not a thing that was in fashion at all. I mean, obviously we know, like, about all the corsets and, you know, like, women would have corsets made out of whalebone that would crack ribs and stuff like that. They couldn't breathe in. And she was like, do you know what would be good? A cinched waist.
Yeah.
Let's do that now.
Let's do that instead.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. I could never have done the corsets.
You've been listening to History Gap with me, Georgia McAndrew.
And me, thank you so much for listening.
If you liked today's episode, don't forget to like and subscribe, and please review.
And don't forget to follow us on TikTok at History Gap and on Instagram at History Gap _. Feel free to post it on your story, this episode, and tag us. We love to see it.
And if anyone is listening and would like to send us some secondhand Chanel, we're free and available.
Let us know.
Let us know. We'll send you the address. Okay, love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.